diversification doesn't necessarily mean putting a chip on every single square. Mm-hmm. Diversification means figuring out which squares need chips to achieve that stated goal. Because if you over-diversify a portfolio, it won't go anywhere, mm-hmm. right? And so it's about thoughtful diversification at the end of the day that we think is of the utmost importance.
Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm Gabriela Santos, Chief Market Strategist for the Americas here at JP Morgan Asset Management. This year, we've been spending time on Insights Now, sitting down with our research analysts across JP Morgan Asset Management, first in equities and then in fixed income. For this season, we'll chat with multi-asset research analysts. They spend their time doing research on how tactical and strategic asset allocation should adapt to shifting economic and policy environments, different desired outcomes such as retirement, and across different investing styles, including fundamental and quantitative investment. On this episode of Insights Now, I'll be joined by David Lebovitz, global strategist and a member of the fundamental research team within our multi-asset solutions business, and probably familiar to a lot of you as he's a friend of the show. I'll ask David about his investment process, his current macro and investment views, and how portfolio allocation is evolving. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch along on YouTube by tuning in to our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked in the show notes. Now, let's get started. David, welcome back to Insights Now.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Always good to have you. Especially this year, so many different headlines, short-term noise. In your seat now, how do you think about balancing your long-term view and your strategic allocation, and then what's happening in the here and now and how tactical asset allocation can and should change?
So we always go into this with a plan, and the plan is based on something that I know is very near and dear to your heart, the long-term capital market assumptions. So one of the things that we've done for actually be 30 years this fall within the multi-asset solutions business is tried to put together forecasts for growth, inflation, and asset returns over a 10 to 15 year period that we view as being representative of a business cycle. And so we have our expectation for growth, we have our expectation for inflation, we think we have a sense of what equities are going to do, bonds are going to do, and alternatives are going to do. What we can then do is take those expected returns, feed them through an optimizer, and come up with, again, that strategic allocation for a given portfolio with a given outcome. So think about the LTCMAs as being kind of the North Star here, where, you know, if we don't know anything else, we know to follow that map. The tactical is very much an overlay. And the way that I think about tactical investing is it's very much responding to what the market is giving you. So in the world we've been in this year, there's been no shortage of volatility, and volatility creates dislocation, which from our vantage point is an opportunity. So you think about everything that happened back in April around Liberation Day. You even go back to 2024. You think about that post-election environment. We're always looking, you know, is volatility causing certain assets to look cheap relative to what we think they should be valued at according to the LTCMAs, or are things looking expensive, again, relative to that long-term view? And so if you think about the tactical as kind of, you know, dancing around the curves of the business cycle and the strategic giving you that long-term view, that's how the two pieces really come together and form our approach to asset allocation.
Yeah, it's impossible to just have one without the other.
Exactly.
It can't be too long-term only. You also can't be swinging wildly in the short term.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is there an example where you can give us where maybe you have a certain view in the long term in that strategic asset allocation, but then tactically maybe the way prices have moved or the business cycle has changed, maybe it gives you a different conclusion for tactical asset allocation?
I think a great example of that today is what we're seeing in credit, specifically things like U.S. high yield. So again, if you go back to the long-term capital market assumptions, you know, we have a spread assumption there of about 475 basis points, and that's the equilibrium spread assumption for high yield, again, over the course of the business cycle. We think that translates to an expected return of somewhere between 6 and 7%. And so you think about that relative to the volatility of credit, which tends to be much lower than equity, and over, again, that 10 to 15 year horizon, credit looks fairly attractive. Let's look at the environment we're in today. You have high yield spreads in the United States below 300 basis points. Spreads are extremely tight, both on a quality adjusted and a quality unadjusted basis. And, you know, the thing with fixed income is at the end of the day, it's all math. Right. So there's only so tight that spreads can get. And then your price appreciation is really maxed out. And so while we don't dislike credit because we view it as a non-recessionary asset, we're not as overweight credit as we had been where valuations were more attractive. We like the asset over the long term. But the pricing that we're seeing in the current environment, despite healthy fundamentals and healthy technicals, just leads us to take a little bit of risk off the table and, again, have a more neutral stance than we might have, you know, building a portfolio from scratch and thinking on that longer term view.
So it's not, do you want it, do you not want it? It's more tweaks around.
Exactly. How do you size it? I mean, that's really the question when it comes to investing is you can have the best idea in the world, but if it's too big or too small within the context of your portfolio, it can make or break your performance at the end of the day. And so it's that putting all the pieces together part of the process that, again, we spend a lot of time on because we've seen it lead to both success as well as failure.
In terms of your role, how much, besides those portfolio topics then, do you spend just thinking about what's happening in the economy itself cyclically, or how much you're thinking about how much policy is changing in different parts of D.C.? How much time do you spend on that?
So given that I sit in the fundamental research group, all of our views really start with a view on the direction of travel for the economy. And so I would put policy off to one side just for a moment, and we'll talk about that in more detail very, very shortly. But, you know, back to the long-term capital market assumptions, we have this supply-side model for what trend economic growth and trend inflation will be over that forecast horizon. We can then look at where we are today and say, do we think growth is going to be a little bit better? Do we think growth is going to be a little bit worse? Do we think inflation is going to be a little bit hotter? Do we think inflation is going to be a little bit cooler? Once we have that fundamental macroeconomic view established, we say to ourselves, okay, what does that backdrop mean for policy? Or is there a risk that policy undermines our expected direction of travel? When you think about monetary policy, right, it's very reactive to what's happening in the economy, what's going on in the labor market, what's going on with prices. That's going to dictate what the Federal Reserve is going to do. You think about policy coming more on the fiscal side, and that can really have a significant impact on the overall pace of growth or the overall trajectory of inflation. We try not to think about politics. We try to think about policy. And when we think about policy, we're always very focused on how that can impact the economy. Is it through government spending? Is it through commodity prices? We're not trying to allow our emotions and the way we feel influence the way we think. We're trying to establish those direct connections between shifts in the policy environment and what that impact will be on the macroeconomics. That then allows us to form an asset allocation view and position portfolios to hopefully benefit from the environment that materializes.
Thinking through kind of tying all those together, I know you and the team have periodic strategy summits.
We do.
How do you put it all together? The macro view, if policy is changing that direction of travel or not, and then topics like sizing and valuations. Take us through that.
Sure. So we always start by establishing the macroeconomic view. Based on the macroeconomic view, you can come up with an investment thesis. And I actually think the environment we're in today is a great example where when we look at what's going on in corporate America and we look at what's going on in the U.S. economy, they're arguably two different things, right? You know, slower payroll growth, unemployment rate edging higher. Yet you look at the most recent earnings season, 81% of companies beat earnings estimates and earnings growth was positive on both a quarter over quarter and a year over year basis. So we take stock of the macroeconomics, then we come up with the investment thesis. Once we have that investment thesis, we say, okay, why do we have this view? What are the three bullet points that support putting on this trade in a portfolio? We then do the really fun part, which is, well, what are the risks, right? Where could we be wrong? And are we comfortable enough that the support for that thesis will outweigh the risk? At this point, we've really fully vetted the idea. We then generate expected returns across a bull scenario, a base case, and a bear scenario. And once you have that combination of the numbers, which are obviously very quantitative, and the risks and opportunities or supports, which are more so qualitative, you can present that to the portfolio managers, and then they can make the decision around sizing the allocation within their portfolios, depending on their objective. And, you know, we run total return accounts, we run very tactical around accounts, we run long-term accounts, like target date funds. And so we really try to be outcome-oriented and align asset allocation to achieve those long-term goals.
And last time you all got together then and did this exercise of the investment views and the implementation, what is the view? How are you and the team feeling?
So I would say that we're generally constructive on the path forward, but we think that it's going to be a bit bumpy from time to time. I think what we see investors suffering from the most in the current environment is very much recency bias. So they look back at 2023, they look at 2024, they say, we should have this 3% real growth in the U.S. economy, we should have inflation coming down, or, you know, even just going back to the beginning of this year when European equities were on a tear, oh, you know, let's extrapolate that trend into the future. We are constructive, but we realize that markets have priced quite a bit in at their current levels. And so we don't see the risk of recession as being terribly high. We do think growth might slow a bit here over the coming months. At the same time, you're probably going to see inflation heat up, as you did in this morning's inflation numbers to a certain extent. But then we get to 2026, when we're going to have a nice little sugar rush from the big, beautiful bill. And so we don't want to be short risk in this environment. We still like equities, and we are globally diversified. We like things like communication services and technology within the U.S. We also like things like EM equities, playing some of that potential policy improvement in markets abroad. We're neutral on credit. We talked about that primarily due to valuation. And then in a lot of books are carrying a very modest overweight to duration. The thought process there is that the risk of a negative shock to growth, in our view, is higher than a upward shock to inflation. Mm-hmm. If we get an inflation surprise to the upside, that's going to be bad for stocks. It's going to be bad for bonds. We all lived through that in 2022. If you get that downside shock to growth, we do think bonds will be an effective hedge. And so it's really that correlation argument and that utility argument that leaves us holding a little bit of fixed income above and beyond where we would traditionally allocate in that space. The final point I will make is when it comes to alternatives, we do like using alternatives when and where we can. But we try to, again, really think about what is that alternative going to do with respect to the outcome we're trying to solve for in the portfolio. We don't just want to throw in a broadly diversified basket of alternatives because that may not be what the client needs when all is said and done.
And speaking of alternatives, for a long time, we used to just talk about the 60-40, just use that as shorthand, obviously, for a diversified portfolio that only includes public markets. So more and more, that really essential nature of having private markets, how does that feed through to portfolios?
So it's, you know, you put it perfectly. It's like alternatives have moved from being optional to being essential in this environment. And I would actually just start with a simple 60-40 portfolio. Because one of the things that, you know, you see it, I see it, people have home country bias. So before we get to the alternatives, let's make sure we have a globally diversified public asset portfolio. Let's not put all of our chips on the S&P 500. Let's not put all of our chips on U.S. credit. Let's maybe own a little bit of emerging market debt. Let's own some emerging market equities. Earlier this year, we did see opportunity in European equities and were able to benefit from the run that they went on. And so, you know, I think it's important to have investors that are painting with all the colors on the palette and not just leveraging what has worked well, whether that be over the past 12 months or in the case of U.S. equities, you could argue the past 12 to 15 years. Then you get to alternatives. And when we think about alternatives, again, it's really about taking that outcome-oriented approach. We effectively believe that alternatives can do some combination of three things. They can provide an uncorrelated source of income, they can provide a more robust rate of return, or they can provide diversification above and beyond what you might get from, say, traditional U.S. government bonds. And so if we have a client who wants more income, that's going to lead us to things like private credit and real assets. If we have a client who wants a higher rate of return, well, maybe we end up looking a bit more at private equity, and then, you know, trying to diversify the diversifiers, if you will. You know, that's where things like hedge fund strategies, certain types of hedge fund strategies, I should say, can be very valuable as an addition to portfolios. So it's really about, again, determining your objective and then lining up all of the assets that can help you achieve that desired goal.
Yeah, so it's not that diversification's dead in any way, shape,
absolutely
or form. You
not.
Actually want to double down on it.
Exactly.
It's just not perfectly captured by the 60-40 moniker.
Exactly. And I think, you know, diversification doesn't necessarily mean putting a chip on every single square. Mm-hmm. Diversification means figuring out which squares need chips to achieve that stated goal. Because if you over-diversify a portfolio, it won't go anywhere, right? And so it's about thoughtful diversification at the end of the day that we think is of the utmost importance.
A lot more nuanced. In terms of portfolios, you alluded to the fact that it really depends on the client objective.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one-size-fits-all portfolio in real life, right? So how do you think differently depending on different clients' time horizon or risk appetite? How does that change?
So when we come up with an investment view, two of the things that we always try to factor in, one is what time horizon do we think this is going to play out over? And two, what is the funding source, right? What are you going to sell in order to buy something else? And I think the time horizon issue is a really interesting one, because if you're a very tactical investor, and we run some fairly tactical accounts, you know, you're looking at very short-term dislocations in price, in valuation, in correlation. You're basically just trying to move the pieces around as quickly as you can to capture those idiosyncratic moments in the market where things are a little bit offsides. And so that really requires monitoring things, you know, day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute. Whereas if you think about something like a target date fund, right, you're investing over the course of somebody's lifetime. That's, to use a baseball analogy, an area where you can kind of wait for the fat pitch, right? You don't need to go out of high yield at 275 and get back in at 350. You can be neutral on high yield. And then when spreads blow out to 600, 700, 800 during an economic downturn, say, you know what? I think I'm being compensated for the risk that I'm taking on. And even if it doesn't play out tomorrow, I have confidence that it'll play out over the time horizon that I'm expected to invest across. And so it's a very important consideration. And, you know, we always talk about wanting to think like long-term investors. And that's where the LTCMAs can be so valuable. In some accounts, we're going to trade around the LTCMAs a bit more than others, but it's always about that client objective at the end of the day. You know, that more even so than the LTCMAs is really the North Star for us in multi-asset solutions.
One last question in terms of portfolio construction.
Yes.
Big, big topic in our industry is this idea of democratization of alternatives.
Yep.
How does that show up, or has already perhaps showed up, in your portfolios, thinking about all those client objectives?
I mean, it frankly makes life a whole lot easier. A lot of these semi-liquid, more retail-oriented vehicles that have been created do a fairly good job of tracking the performance of a truly private strategy. And so for us, if the client can handle the illiquidity, we'll go through the less liquid channel. We'll own private direct real estate. But if perhaps they can't handle that amount of illiquidity, then we look for some of these more, to use your term, democratized solutions, where you're just going to have a little bit of flexibility. And if you need to get into an allocation, you need to get out of an allocation, you know, those are extremely valuable. The other thing that I would add is that the growth in the secondary market has been quite beneficial as well, because, again, it gives you the opportunity to resize your allocation if you're suffering from the denominator effect, whether that's lightening up on a certain asset or maybe adding to a certain asset. It also allows you to take advantage of dislocations, to our conversation earlier, in the way that a truly private, you know, 7 to 10 year closed-end fund with a lockup isn't going to afford the same opportunity. And so, you know, for me, the more buttons I have on the dashboard that I can hit, the more excited I am about putting together portfolios to help people achieve their long-term goals.
Bonus question for you.
Awesome.
To bring us home. What is one book, one podcast, one movie, one journal that you'd recommend for folks interested in fundamental research or portfolio construction? One anything in the world, and then one JP Morgan Asset Management one?
So it's actually very relevant in the world that we are in, given everything related to AI that's been going on. I'd recommend a book called The Wealth of Humans by a gentleman named Ryan Avent. He used to write for The Economist. And basically, it's about how economies go through these big technological shifts over time. Think like the steam engine, the automobile, the internet, right? And now AI, and how, yes, you end up destroying jobs on one end of the spectrum, but you create a lot of jobs on the other end of the spectrum. And overall productivity and the quality of life tends to improve. I think that it's just for me, it was a really interesting book, and I think it's particularly relevant in the environment that we're currently in. In terms of an internal publication, well, obviously Guide to the Markets will forever be near and dear to my heart.
Thank you.
But I think the best compliment to the guide is probably the Eye on the Market. I think Michael does a great job unpacking deep issues in significant detail and providing a slightly differentiated perspective. And you know, look, in my seat, my goal isn't to generate benchmark returns, it's to generate alpha. And so the more differentiated ways of thinking that I can expose myself to, the better my batting average when it comes to achieving that goal.
Never mind the pieces you mentioned, the long-term capital market assumptions.
Exactly.
And then the asset allocation report as well.
Exactly. So
happy to help.
Plenty of resources here at JP Morgan.
I love those. I'll write those down. Thank you so much, David. Thanks for joining us again. We hope to see you soon.
Absolutely.
And importantly, thank you for listening and watching this latest episode of Insights Now. Make sure to check out our upcoming episodes with other multi-asset strategy research analysts, including quantitative analysts, policy analysts, as well as retirement ones. So lots more to come, and we hope to see you soon.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed JP Morgan Asset Management or by other areas of JP Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. JP Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of JP Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.